Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
And here's another one. I live in Lakeside. Here's the question I got from
the second cup that night.
I got pulled over twice that night. I am 5 blocks from my home. And he asked me, sir, what is your business in this neighborhood? And he's like, that's an interesting choice of music you're playing there. Because I was playing meditative music at the time because I was so angry when I left the other cup. And I was like,
I put on my treatment room music. Like,
and I like, well, I've got to survive this. That's why I'm playing this music. He looks at me like, what? Completely clueless. And he's like, do you still live in this address, sir? I said, I prefer not to talk about where I live right now. I just want to know why you pulled me over. I have learned from my experiences to never argue with a cop, because that means he already sees me as a he's already afraid of me, because society tells him so, because the media tells him I'm a dangerous person. And I say there is nothing scarier to me in my life than a scared white male with a gun, period. And of course, I have to, unlike I talk in my police trainings, I have to face the same person that I fear on the street. And I have to look them in the eye. And they're just human beings like me.
Hey, this is Judy with Wellness Renaissance and the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. Thank you so much for being here today. This is part 2 of my conversation with Charles Fye and Shannon May. You are absolutely welcome to start here, but I highly suggest checking out part 1 after you listen to this episode. Charles does make reference to a quail egg story, and if you are starting here, that story appears in the first episode in part 1 and also on the Facebook page. Today we're going to continue to talk about what are the things we can do to make equitable change and what does it mean or look like to be an ally. And I want to send my gratitude to Charles for sharing some of the stories he shared today, some really intense stuff that I can imagine retelling would just be really tough and bringing up all of that intensity and right back to that experience. So I thank him so much for sharing, because it's helpful for us. I hope it's helpful for us to hear those stories, to have a deeper understanding of what his experience is on a daily basis. And I know for me, typically if I'm hearing a story like this, I'm there in my head. And of course, it's my mental creation. And he, as he's talking about, is living the real experience. And that is hard and that is intense. But I am grateful for him to share. And if we can go to that place in our head, perhaps to gain an understanding of how uncomfortable that is, and then thinking about what that's like to live on a daily basis. And if that's hard and feels uncomfortable, I hope for you that it is something you are able to do in the safety of your own home and inside your own head, and don't have to deal with in life at all, or especially not all the time. I hope that makes sense. The weekend before this episode is released, I had the opportunity to go down to the George Floyd Memorial, the spot that he was actually murdered. And I don't exactly know why I'm telling you this, except somehow it feels like it's something that I should share, because it's something so related to the conversation, obviously, that we're having, and the reason we are having this conversation right now anyway. And I'm really glad that I went. I tend to be one of those people who likes to sort of be in the space that something happened. I like to see the spot. I like to understand. I don't understand that about myself. It's just something that I have sort of grown to know and accept. I like to understand that thing happened there. And the memorial is tons of flowers and signs, and it's a beautiful space, and there are many people that were there and having conversations and kind of physical distancing. That was a little bit of a challenge, but there was definitely some awareness, and most people were wearing masks as well. But I appreciated, it's just weird to have all of those things kind of converge at once with COVID and George Floyd's death and all of this. One of them at a time is a lot to take, but put them together and it just adds a whole nother layer and tension and energy to the whole thing. I'm really glad I had the opportunity. It was just a good, if you can call it good, it was a good time and space to sort of just be present and take it all in and see everything with my own eyes and not through the somebody else's video lens or through somebody's cut video. So I appreciated that. And yeah, I don't know what else to say. It was, for me, it was also going down and seeing kind of some of my old neighborhoods. I lived not too close there, but I did live close to some of the areas that were affected, and to just see my old stomping grounds, a couple of them, was just sort of, I don't know, trying to find the right word, a little bit heavy, kind of makes the whole thing real in a different way. It's kind of that different touchstone than, again, being in Duluth, Minnesota, and knowing that it's happening, you know, 2.5 hours away. So if you're hearing this, I don't know how long that memorial is going to be there, but if it's something you feel called to do, for me, I'm glad I had the opportunity. I will post a few pictures on the Facebook page as well, just to share things through my eyes and what I saw. Before we head into the interview, I want to absolutely thank you, for those of you who are listeners to the podcast, for sharing the podcast. Thank you so much for everybody who shared the podcast episode last week. Definitely saw the numbers and a ton of listens. So thank you so much for that. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing the episode. That is one way that this message travels through and connects with more people, is your sharing. So thank you so much for doing that. I am so grateful and appreciative. And I want to send out, of course, a special and huge thank you to all of you who are supporting the podcast on Patreon and helping us keep this going. I sincerely appreciate your dedication to my dedication of the work and the mission we've got going on here. So thank you so much for that. And I also thank those of you who have supported me with the random gift certificate to the co-op and other little gifts. I do appreciate those as well. So thank you. Thank you so much for that. And sponsoring this episode is Green Home Solutions, your indoor air quality experts. If you are having any concerns with mold, maybe it's an odor you're not quite sure about, or COVID has you needing a little extra support around disinfection, give them a call. If you're in Duluth, you can reach Steve at 218-576-5293. And if you're anywhere else in the United States, visit greenhomesolutions.com and they will connect you with whomever is closest to you. And there's a lot of great information on that site as well. All right. Well, thank you for being here. Let's join back up with the conversation with Charles and Shannon.
And people have to make a conscious choice to be invested and not be complacent or not stay in their comfort zone. And that investment will make changes. I have watched the protest and seen how diverse it is, you know, from different towns. And I said, I think this is the time. Mm-hmm. This is the time that it's another level from the civil rights. And I think this period will forever be known as the second tier of civil rights. And I just hope that anyone listening to keep that momentum, because this is not going to change with a stroke of a pen. We've run the risk of sliding back to that, to what came from. And I say this because, sincerely, I am afraid that I could be the next Floyd. That is a fear that is in my mind a lot. You know, I, not once, at least in two occasions, I have had police guns pointed at me for reasons that they should not be. And I always come out and I said, I survived those two. What if the next time becomes when the trigger gets pulled? Right? You never know. And for anyone listening, and I say, it is real. Just realizing that police are more like 36% statistics show, more likely to use lethal force against me than against a white male that looks like me for the same behaviors is incredibly, incredibly scary to me. And just knowing that, and for anybody listening to just think, what if that were you? Would you want for there to be changes? What if those statistics were stacked up against you? Will you accept that? And if you're a white person and you say, I wouldn't accept that, I will say, then it is time to be an ally and push to make those changes so that we can have an equitable, might not be equal, but equitable, because these are very two different things. Society that works for everybody, not just the white person. Society that gives everybody an opportunity of growth, an opportunity to go to college, an opportunity to be who they really want to be, and being able to take out those barriers that are standing in the way of people of color, minority people, to be, you know, to be their full potential. And we can all do that together as a community.
Yeah, it's a stress that I can't imagine. I can't really imagine living with every day. You know, I mean, I think that there are a lot of people who don't think the being pulled over because you're black is real. You know, I know Malcolm Gladwell, who has, I don't actually know what his full nationality is, but I know that he's not black, and he has hair that tends to be seen from behind as if that must be a black person. And then he gets pulled over all the time, you know, yes. And he's talked about that. Somebody was telling me a story of a older white gentleman who offered a ride to a younger black man who was in his class. He offered him a ride home, and they got pulled over by the cops, and they separated the two. And the cops said, you know, well, I wanted to get you away from him because I wanted to know if you were being carjacked. And so they calmed that part down, and he convinced the guy, no, I was just giving him a ride, my classmate a ride. And by the time they got back over to the car, the guy he was giving a ride to was, you know, face down on the ground. And he was telling the story and saying, I cannot even imagine like that. I cannot even imagine that. Like that's his everyday life, you know? And that's just, yeah, it's so hard to comprehend when you don't have to, right? And there is a episode of, I don't know if you're familiar with Brené Brown.
Yeah, I love Brené Brown.
I know, she's awesome. There's an episode, her most recent podcast episode, she interviews a gentleman and he talks about how anti-racism is the opposite of racism. And he says, and I think this is, and you can tell me what you think of this, but I think this is an important thing for people to hear, that he talked about the fact that, you know, this is how the racist mentality and the prejudice mentality is something that has been so ingrained in us. So we need to be able to sort of look at that as it's a cultural thing. That doesn't mean we accept it. It means that we need to be able to talk about it and say, oh my gosh, thank you for enlightening me for this horrible thing that I just said, or whatever. And I think that feels like an important step.
Absolutely, I agree. But the struggle is most people shy away from those conversations because the word, oh my goodness, you are racist, instantly they just believe that you are calling them racist. And then it becomes that defense and accusation kind of thing. But it should not be, you know. I hope people can be vulnerable enough to say, you know, this is my environment teaches me this. How can I change that? What can I do to promote an inclusive culture as a person? And it's not when I am around you, but on my daily basis. And so some people think it is something that I do when I'm around a person of color than the thing that I do when I am around. Then I go back to speaking the way I speak when I'm around people that look like me. Now, it is a wholesome change where you start to change that as a whole. And it is what you do when you're not around a person of color that actually makes a big change. That education when the person of color is not around is that what really makes change, start to change that messaging. And we need a lot of that. And it is uncomfortable. You might be alienated by your core group if you have those conversations, mm-hmm. but they need to happen. People need to be vulnerable enough to start that. And like I said, that is being an ally. That's being an ally.
I have another word I want to toss at you because this came up the other day in a meme. And I should say more than a meme, but it's a word that I thought this was a cool concept the first time I heard it, but then I started thinking about it and I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this. The word colorblind, and where I saw this was in some statement of, you know, yes, there are bad cops, but there are, you know, 99% good cops, and there are bad this, but 99% good this. And if you only see the bad, I think the statement was like, you know, I'm colorblind and I see everybody as the same. And it's funny because I read that two different ways. The first time I read it, I almost saw it as being directed towards people of color seeing things negatively. And then I thought, wait a minute, that's probably not how it's meant. It's probably meant to say, I don't see the negative in people. But the colorblind word.
I tell people, and I've had that in so many conferences and so many trainings, the word colorblind is a cop-out. So my question to you is, if I had committed a crime, if I had done something to you, if I came out here and I assaulted you, and then I ran away. And the police came and said, describe the person that assaulted you. If you are colorblind, and they start by saying a black male, I said, let's stop there. You're not colorblind. You do see me as a black male. And it's very important for you to see me as a black male, not just another person. Because when you see me another person, you're more likely to treat me and create policies around me that are very similar to your culture. Because I'm just another male to you. And that's the way it is. There is no such thing as being colorblind. There is color and race in this country. And it plays a big thing. So sometimes I say it's a slap on the face when you tell me you don't see me as a black male. Because it's very important for me, for you to know. I know, I'm sure you've read my wife's quail story.
Yes, I did. Yes, I was gonna make sure I posted that with us. But I wanted to ask you about that too.
Is shared to a million people.
Okay.
If possible. And the reason is because that speaks to the level of anxiety I have. And it is, believe me, and I will share another story with you. It is true. That anxiety is true. It is real. And so when I say, before I show up in anybody's door, I want them to know who I am. I want to know that I'm a black male and what I look like. Because when you've heard over and over that black people are thugs, they are looters, they are uncivilized, and all of a sudden you are expecting Shannon, you know, she calls you white, she must be half a white husband. I mean, that's usually, and all of a sudden you see a black male lurking around your house, you're going to get shot. That's true. Or at the very least, call the cops on you. And yes, when the cops show up, my face is going to be planted down, just like. And I'm going to be begging for my life and telling them not to shoot, like I've done before. And that's not something I want to ever do again. I don't want anyone to ever go through that when there is no reason to do that just because you're different.
Right.
Weird. And so that word colorblind, it's a cop-out for me. It's important for you to see me as a black male. And if you're going to enact policies at work, enact policies that incorporate a black, you know, ask me, as a black male, what I want to see. Not as a male. Not as just some other male. As a black male, what do you want to see? I want that. Because as much as I want the world to not see me as a black male, I am seen and treated as one every time. Especially when my actions make somebody feel threatened. Even though I might not be, my intentions are not to threaten anybody.
I think we struggle with figuring out how to find that balance. How do we operate in the world when we're trying to have equality and at the same time recognize those differences?
Yes. And I say we should be looking more of an equity than equality, because apparently we've been trying to be equal, and that equal does not necessarily rise up to the level of equity.
So the way because I know that's a concept that some people don't quite wrap their head around. And here's how I explain the difference between equity and equality. And you can tell me if this works for you. Mm-hmm. I always say equality is everybody gets a pair of shoes. Yes. Equity is everybody gets a pair of shoes that fits.
Perfect. That is equity. And that's what, so, you know, our law that is supposed to be equal have sent more black people to jail than white people. Is that equitable? No. Statistics show that in terms of crime, there is no statistical difference in crimes committed by white people or black people. But yet, more black people statistically go to jail than white people. Mm-hmm. Is that equality? It, from the distance, it seems like it. But is it equitable? No, it's not. Because I get a harsher sentence than my white counterpart. As a matter of fact, I have had one ticket. And I'm going to tell you the circumstances in which I got this ticket.
Okay.
At the time, I was working at Woodland Hills as a therapist. My unit was down at a church helping make cookies. The lady that they were helping with had a heart attack. And I was called to run down there. I was called to run down and, you know, because the staff that was there was trying to get an ambulance for this lady and the kids were getting rowdy. So I am driving down as fast as I can and I got pulled over. I tried to explain to the cop. He didn't want to hear. And I said, I can't raise my voice with this man. I just said, well, you're right. I was speeding. And what happened is I got the maximum ticket that you can possibly give. That's my first ever ticket.
Wow.
And I remember radioing back to the home saying, send somebody else. I've been pulled over. And the kids driving by in the bus looking at me. And when I came, they're like, ha, 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 you got pulled over by the police. You know? So I'm going to go back now to that privilege. My coworker said, oh, yeah, I have used my badge to get out of that every time I've been pulled over. I said, my badge did not help me, sir. I tried. Mm-hmm. The cop never. I've told, you know, I was like, this lady having a heart attack, man. I'm going to take care of my kids. He did never listen. And, you know, he just gave me my ticket. But they're like, we've been pulled over around that place so many times and you show your badge and they let you go. I said, because you're white. He can resonate with you. He can actually, there's that brotherhood with you that he can, but there is that disconnect between him and I as a black male and him as a white male and a male with authority. And as a black male, I am told to never, not told, I have learned from my experiences to never argue with a cop, because that means he already sees me as a, he's already afraid of me because society tells him so, because the media tells him I'm a dangerous person. And I say there is nothing scarier to me in my life than a scared white male with a gun, period. And so I always have to, oh, yes, sir. All right. All I need to do is I want to get off and I want to go. So whatever you have my way, I will just take it. And so someone I work told me, hey, go fight it. I said, you're right. I'm going to go fight it. But you know what's going to happen? I'm going to lose hundreds of dollars by taking a day off to go to court and get a ticket off. And I'm not in a position where I can do that. I wrote the ticket, got it, and walked away. And that's my one and only ticket that I've ever had. But I also want to share to the public that I have lived in Duluth since 2011. I have owned 5 vehicles. And I was preparing to go to a talk, and I said, I'm going to go through my stash of write-offs that I've had from the police and see if there is a trend, if there's a particular vehicle that I'm not less likely going to pull over in. And I looked, and I've been pulled over in every single one of my 5 vehicles.
Wow.
So every vehicle I've owned, in all of those very bogus reasons, completely, extremely bogus reasons. And I say that is the life of a black male. And I'm just looking at the vehicles. I haven't looking at the multitudes. And I haven't looking at a time where I've been pulled over that I never got anything written, where it's like, oh, I'm just going to let you go. And so for anyone who has never had to stay at a barrel of a gun for having done nothing wrong and have to beg and pray that this is not your last interaction in the world, that this is not the last thing you see as a human being, to really make a commitment to become an ally, because that's what we go through every day. And that's my story.
Wow.
Two times in my life, I've had to face the barrel of a gun for something I did nothing wrong.
That's another thing that's come up a lot too, is, well, just comply with the police officers. Just, and it's like, but that doesn't work for everybody.
No.
You know?
George Floyd complied. He was dead.
Yeah.
Fernando Castillo complied. He was dead. In one of my situations, I'm just lucky, because I started losing it. I started losing it, and I had to draw upon an intense mental strength to talk myself out of it, you know, just to come home alive. And I just remembered, and I'm making a point of duty to share this, as I am having a lot of emotions come out from that, because I remember my wife was pregnant at the time, and my last thing I wanted to do was, you know, have her raise my son alone, you know, and I think that's what got me through that, you know, for something I did nothing wrong about. And that is what pulled me out of not really acting on my fear, because I peed in my pants. I mean, that's true. It's scary that I'm saying that. But for anybody listening, as a law-abiding citizen, that's what I go through. That's what I go through.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, just because your skin happens to be a particular color.
Yes, just because I was black. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. You know, it's hard to talk about. And but I can't not fight to change that. Mm-hmm. Because I remember how I felt on that day. And I remember I had a song going through my head. This is a song that in Cameroon was sung in rallies in the 90s, because people were being shot by the police, and it just came back to my head, and I was started singing, "Today may be my last day, so what will I say when I meet my creator?" And it just started singing that song as I walked out of the car facing with guns drawn at me. And I had to switch. I made a purpose when I said, "No, I'm coming back home to my pregnant wife. I will see my unborn child. And whatever I will do here, I will do it just for that purpose." To where I changed my mindset. And I started telling myself, you know, breathe in, do what they're asking you to do. Don't flinch. Don't do no movement, you know. And I taught myself, because I was losing it. And I was sure if I freaked out, I was going to get shot. Because I had seen it on the news. I'd seen it And I kept saying, please don't shoot me, please don't shoot me. You know? But they walked out free. I had no recourse.
Gosh. Yeah. That's torture.
And that is what, when I get in the car every morning I drive, that is in the back of my head.
Right.
You know, and I would share another one. And this is... And I'm sharing this because it is not the police. It is the police. They are, in a way, a representation of where this community is. Mm-hmm. This is not isolated. You know, I was in school. I was in college going through my master's program. There were 56 of us in my cohort. And I was the only person of color, the only black person. The rest of the other 55 were white. And so we will go outside, after every 3 hours to go validate our parking. So we came down to pay our parking and go get food really quick and then run back to class. And I showed up around 20 minutes late. And the professor yelled at me, like, "What? You know, you are late." And I just sat down quietly. "And you want to explain to the class why you're late?" And so here's why I was late. I came in. When I bought my ticket, you know, like the parking ticket, and I was coming to put it in my car from the parking meter, validated my meter, and there you get a sticker that you come and put on your car. And so I came in putting it on my car, and I got approached by these two cops who said, sir, what are you doing? And I turned around and I was like, what do you mean? We're asking you what you're doing. And I'm like, what do you mean? Because I was really confused. Mm-hmm. And like, whose car is that? I said, it's my car. He's like, are you sure you're not trying to break into the car? And they just kept me there. Just see your driver's license. And I go, oh my goodness. And so out of 50 of us that went and did the same thing, why was it that I was the only person that was approached and that was questioned for paying their parking? But once, it did not happen twice. It happened numerous times.
Wow.
You know, and it doesn't matter how I dressed. It just didn't matter. People are like, oh, you dress nice, you don't look. No, it doesn't matter. And so that is just a reflection of where the policing, the, you know, over-policing of Black people reflects the general anxiety, especially, you know, that the community has about Black people.
Right. Wow. Gosh, that's just, it's just so hard to fathom. I was just told a story the other day of a person who, a member of their church congregation was running to church in dress, you know, suit, dress clothes, and mm-hmm. was stopped on his way. And he was running because he was late and he didn't want to be late for mm-hmm. church. And other church members had to come and say, yeah, he's a member of our church. Like, that's just, it's so hard to think of that.
Yes. And it's, you know, and of course I have to, and like I talk in my police trainings, I have to face the same person that I fear on the street. And I have to look them in the eye. And they're just human beings like me.
Right. And you're stepping into their space and seeing their humanity, and you're asking for that in return.
In return. Mm-hmm. I'm the kind of person that I'd like to face, you know, I'm not confrontational per se, but I, you know, I like to face my fears and make and push for changes. And a lot of people are like, where do you get the courage from to go and train a bunch of police officers? And I said, because I don't want anybody coming after me to go through the stuff that I've gone through. And some of the things I've shared today, they are not from Duluth per se,
mm-hmm.
But I have been pulled more times in Duluth than even Portland, where I felt like I was followed by the police wherever I go.
Oh, wow.
And so there is that reality, you know, which is, you know, it's what it is. And as we speak and I talk about the police, I did get a call from someone from PBS that said, your training, I have seen the way the police responded to the protest here. I believe your training is rubbing off.
Mm.
I believe something is changing. And I was down there to cover it, and I saw something different. And I said, thank you. That's all I hope. That's all I hope is that some awareness is built and that some changes are made. Well, I know I'm taking this conversation to all different levels. I hope this is what you're looking for.
No, it's perfect. I think these are the opportunities people don't have. These are the conversations nobody knows how to be. You know, it's not always a thing we can do. And mm-hmm. sometimes being in a room together, I mean, I always have these dreams about being in rooms together, having conversations, having community conversations that I have no idea how to start. I tried to start many of them when I was a student. I went back to school, moved up to Duluth to go to school. And one of the things that I kept seeing and was trying to figure out how to shift was I saw everything happen in silos. So mm-hmm. often, not 100%, right. But so often it's like we have racism conversations with the African-American group. We have racism conversations with the Latino group. We have racist conversation, you know, with this group. And then we have the people with disabilities. And then we have the LGBTQ community. And right. I'm like, we have to mix together.
No.
Yes.
I don't need any more racism conversations. And when I tell people this, they're like, what? I'm like, you need racism conversations, you know? It has to be wholesome. We all have to come together and talk about this together. And we all have to be vulnerable, you know. I had asked people a question. As we sit here, do any of you guys know how many, like, the curbside cuts, you know, when you come in on the sidewalks, where the sidewalk meets the main road?
The slant?
The slant. Yeah. Do you, any of you guys here know how many of those are around? No. And I said, I have a friend who whose best friend was on a wheelchair, and he was always marking the in town. Like, he would walk around town and mark what streets had the curved lamps, and that is because he was marking that out for his friend. So right. His friend knows, if I have to take a bus and I'm going here, where do I stop so that I can go up and right. over on my wheelchair? That level of awareness that we don't even have.
Right. Yeah. Oh, gosh. So exactly. That's exactly. It's true. And that's why I want to have the conversations, see more conversations with people from multiple groups all together to learn about those types of things. Because you're right. That's when I plan a trip, I'm like, where are the stoplights so I can cross the street safely?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. But yeah, right. The curb cut is a totally a thing yeah. that, yeah, your mobility ends if mm-hmm. you don't have that curb cut or there's a snowbank. And,
yes.
you know, and it's a reality that a lot of people, they don't have to deal with, right? They can just say, you know mm-hmm. what, not really my problem. And that, yes. those are the places whenever somebody says not my problem or thinks that, that's the moment it's like, look, I realize we can't all be advocates and actively doing things all the time. Like, we could spend our entire lives with that. And it's sad because it's true, right? But those are the moments to take that step back and understand that somebody is a real life problem for somebody.
You absolutely. Know,
it is yeah. a daily affecting thing potentially for them. And
so that's right. yep. And if we have, talking about being involved and being engaged, if we have, as able-bodied people, can just walk around without thinking, what if I had to meet that person somewhere? Mm-hmm. I want to be mindful that wherever they park their car, wherever they get off the bus, that they're able to get to where I want them to go. And that is awareness. Mm-hmm. That is being an ally. Not just saying, meet me at blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And so it is up to me to make that, to make know his needs as a person with disability and right. accommodate for those needs. And not with tell him, I am here, come meet me here. And he says, I can't get in there because there's no curb cut there. I don't need to make that his deal to tell me that I need right. to do my homework ahead of time. And that's what it means to be an ally, is invest in knowing their needs.
Right. Is that ask.
Or ask.
Right. Yeah. Not having complacency.
Not having complacency.
Right.
And being equitable in your decisions when you are dealing with this person. I think this example is easier for people to kind of get that level. I will tell you another story. So I used to hang out with, there is a bar where a lot of my ex-co-workers would hang out, you know, once a night just to connect with each other. Once a week. Oh my gosh. Shannon had to call
that yes.
And I have been to this place, and people are always like, have a drink. Yeah, Mr. Farr is here, have a drink. And I said, no, I cannot be out as a driver and drink. There were three instances where I went there, and we all left, around 12 of us in number. Every single one of them would have been pulled over, and they would have had a DUI. But guess who gets pulled over right after we leave the bar? It's me. And I will call them, because I have always done that. I will put them on the phone and say, guess who's by the side of the road pulled over by the cops? What? I'm like, that is your privilege as a white person.
Mm-hmm.
You got to drive home drunk as heck.
And not that that's okay.
And not that that is okay.
Wouldn't want that anyways.
I don't want that anyways.
Right.
But you got to drive home. And out of everybody that left that bar, and I, like when I passed, I said, guess what? I just saw two cop cars parked there. And clearly they're facing the bar. So let's see who gets pulled over when we leave. So have you been drinking? Oh my gosh. No, I know you just saw me leave the bar. And I've not been drinking for this very reason. And here's another one. I live in Lakeside. Here's the question I got from
the second cop
that night. I got pulled over twice that night. And he pulled.
Like, he just couldn't get home.
No kidding, right?
Just couldn't get.
And I'm always, you know, hyper aware and she can't go to sleep. I'm like, not until I know you're home.
And right. So I am literally half a mile, 5 blocks from my home. And he asked me, sir, what is your business in this neighborhood? And he's like, that's an interesting choice of music you're playing there. Because I was playing meditative music at the time because I was so angry when I left the other cup. And I was like, I just need to play. And I said,
I'm put on my treatment room music.
Like, and I like, well, I've got to survive this. That's why I'm playing this music. It's like, he looks at me like, what? Completely clueless. And he's like, do you still live in this address, sir? And I couldn't. I said, I prefer not to talk about where I live right now. I just want to know why you pulled me over. Mm-hmm. And he said, you are going 4 to 5 miles. And I said, you know, when you put on your lights, it's exactly where it dropped from 40 to 30. Mm-hmm. You just had a reason to finally pull another black man over, just like your brother cop that just pulled me 3 miles ago over there, back there from coming out of a bar. And that's my life.
And people wonder why there's rioting and looting and anger. And, you know, I think you can't understand it until you experience it. And even if you experience a sliver of it, it's hard to put into the everyday mindset of understanding that. But it's what
complacency, how that contributes to it. You know, it's like, oh, well, it's not really me, so I'm not going to put energy into that.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, why is this happening? Like, it didn't come out of nowhere.
Right. Yeah, exactly. This isn't a surprise, people. And, mm-hmm. And lucky you if you really think it is, in the sense that, again, like you said, Charles, it's not good for a whole community to ignore those things at all. Mm. But man, be able to recognize that you're living in a very different world than somebody else. I just had somebody in, I don't know what the situation was, but I had two people fighting outside my house the other day. Mm-hmm. And one person was white and one person was black. And I very much made the decision I wasn't going to call unless I thought somebody was going to get hurt. And I'm like, this stinks I'm listening for language or for things that sound like somebody might get hurt before I'm going to mm-hmm. put these two in any sort of danger, I guess. And it's sad to have to think that way.
Yeah, that is so sad, you know, because I mean, the term peace officer, it's like, can we have more of that?
And we've seen so many examples, you know, the people who call in, I think it was Minneapolis, who called the police. I think it was two black people, one white person called the police to say, hey, this is what's happening over here. This place is getting broken into. The cops come and they go to arrest the people who called. And a journalist is like, no, wrong people. You know, they're the ones who called you. Go, those guys, go get them. And like, how much wasted time is there? And energy and the things that don't get handled that should be, because the focus is in the wrong direction. Any final words that either of you both want to share? Things that we haven't touched on that we should? Something that people can think about or do?
Well, there's just a story that comes to mind for me that I think can kind of summarize to a little bit about just being human, you know, and getting curious about other people. And when my brother-in-law moved here, I forget where he was somewhere, and there was this, you know, white man, and he was just like, sitting there thinking, you know what? I don't really know one black person. And why don't I? And he just walked right up to my brother-in-law. I was like, hi, I'm here. And I'm just curious. Like, I realize I don't really know any black people. And I want to get to know you.
Oh, wow. You know?
And they have created. They are the best of friends.
Oh, my gosh. And that's so cool.
They've gone on trips together. He, like... Our next trip to Cameroon, he's like on board. He's like, I'm there with you guys, you know? And it's just like, look at this, like just the idea of like, you know, let me just check myself here. And where am I making my judgments from? And let me get to know someone so I can just get to know another culture, another person, another color, and see where it goes. And I think the more we have those experiences so we can personalize it and understand mm-hmm. it better, that's really where the true change will start to happen. Mm-hmm. When you get that heart connection.
Right. Well, you know, it's the same thing as when people were working for gay marriage rights. The conversation was one person at a time. That is where we have effective change. And yeah. It's the same thing here.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all about developing that, realizing how much in common we have than how much different we are, and owning that, and supporting each other, advocating for each other, owning our community and building it together.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your stories and your experiences. I think, you know, we're just, this is really tough for everybody for all different reasons. People with good intentions, people very aware, people very unaware. Nobody quite knows what to do. And I think these conversations are really important. And I'm excited to have been able to talk to you guys and to put this out into the world. And I hope people can hear that and hear the humanity and the experience and just think about, you know, I mean, we all, everybody, you know, I think there's truth in this. We all act tribally in our own ways at times.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm.
And it's just that awareness of that. And what does that mean? And where does that come from? And how does that apply to the situation or not? And then how can I help that not happen? Yeah. So thank you for putting yourself out there. I really appreciate that, because I know this is, you know, it's tough stuff to talk about and it's tough stuff to live.
Yeah.
To everybody, little things make big changes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, yeah. Judy.
Little things make big changes. I want to thank Charles and Shannon again for sharing such intense and deep stuff with us. It takes a lot of energy and a lot of vulnerability to do that, even if it is going out there for the greater good. So thank you again. And thank you to the listeners for sharing in this conversation. These conversations need to keep happening, whether you're listening to them or especially if you can have them with actual real live human people. I think of Shannon's story of Charles' brother and being approached by a white man saying, "Hey, I don't know any black people. I want to get to know you." One could imagine that for many of us, that would take a lot of pushing past our own stuff, right? The fear of saying the wrong words and maybe offending that person or having them reject us or being embarrassed. It is beautiful that Charles' brother was able to accept that invitation so well. I hope that this conversation, that these episodes of this podcast can be one little tool that perhaps people may have to share a conversation, share this experience, Charles's experience, with somebody who maybe doesn't have people in their lives to listen to about this. And yes, it's a conversation that they're listening to, but can that bridge conversations with, again, actual real people and maybe create some understanding and drop some barriers down? I was just talking to somebody who said that she's having conversations with people differently than before because of all of the things that are happening. And that is a sign of hope. And how do we keep those conversations going? As we talked about in the podcast, and I'm hearing more conversations about, and I think they're really important for us to hear, is the fact that this is something so ingrained in all of us from history and generations back. It's, you know, kind of in our DNA. That doesn't mean we have to act on it. And that doesn't mean we can't learn new habits and new neural grooves and muscle memory to do things differently. But the acknowledgement that we're all struggling, and as one of the authors that I was listening to said, you know, this isn't our fault, but then how do we take that information and move forward with it? And how do we be gentle with each other as we are trying to perhaps be a little more brave in our conversations and the conversations topic and conversation topics and reaching out to people in different ways than maybe we have before, or being able to have conversations differently than we have before? So I think somehow we need to integrate that concept into our minds so that we can be more gentle with ourselves and don't have the embarrassment or the wrong step if we do say something that doesn't work out, that we aren't debilitated by that and close back down and then never come back out of our shell, but to be able to examine and acknowledge and continue the conversation with somebody about it. Perhaps that person that was on the other end of whatever happened, or other people, so we can all continue those conversations. And I'm grateful for Charles for giving us such a really nice framework to work from and thought-provoking things to think about, and something that we can perhaps, again, share with people who might not feel the same way or just have a reference of experience or understanding. These are changing times, and for a lot of reasons, and I hope they continue to be changing times. On that note, take good care, and may you continue to discover the pieces that fit and support your journey in your health and wellness puzzle.